sometimes tried to tell us stories, but we were clear that this was not her job. However, she was adept at providing small, colourful details, often rather risque ones. At such moments, my father would silently raise the hairless ridges where his eyebrows used to be before they were blown off in the war. His knowledge seemed inexhaustible, and I took him for granted as a source of information. Only after his death, 40 years later, did I realize how accustomed I was to stretching out my hand for that fund of knowledge. It was like pulling a book off the shelf, except far easier. And often he was wise, broad-minded, and learned. He carefully explained to me when I was about 14 that Antonio's remark in the opening scene of The Merchant of Venice, "In sooth, I know not why I am so sad," was because Antonio was homosexual and, as my father put it, the boys are growing away from him. I knowledgeably repeated this judgment in an English lesson at Godolphin. It was met by embarrassed silence and the heavy implication that I should be ignorant about such matters. My father disagreed, to his credit. But sometimes he was ludicrously wrong. He would improvise. After all, he had a reputation to keep up, and if the subject awoke his imagination, he would happily deliver an answer. He always had an air of authority. He could bluff for England. Over the years, I regretfully learned caution. When we first went to Greece in 1961 and gazed at the open-air theatres that hummed with crickets and had heat rising visibly off them, he told me that the small, neat channels bridged with something that looked like a couple of inches of marble ribbon, you see, useful and beautiful, in the front of each white marble seat, were to allow people to empty their bladders in the middle of the day-long performances. Now I can see that actually these channels were to allow the rain to empty off the marble surface, rather than eroding the stone by staying in the precisely carved, buttock-shaped depression in the seat. But this has not occurred to him, so he made something up. And as he did so, he built a truth for himself, and it stuck much harder than mere information would have done. When I was small, before I could read, he sometimes told me Bible stories, but these were handicapped, and not merely by religious reticence. He told me once how the disciples were sailing on the Sea of Galilee, just like us in Seahorse. Something shining came towards them on the water. "And what do you think it was?" he asked indulgently, waiting for me to utter a childishly sweet reference to Jesus, a name he was shy of articulating himself. "A whale?" I suggested. That was the end of the Bible stories, a relief to us both. He was best on stories where people did things. It would have been tremendous if he'd described how the apostles rigged their boats or mended their nets. He would tell you methodically about some process, and it would be fascinating. There is a small grey and white photograph of the three of us. David, my father, me. We are laughing. My mother is the photographer, and she has waited for the punchline. We are in the ruins of a hill fort on a Welsh mountain. I'm 7. I have fair hair and pigtails, and I wear shorts, white socks, and little leather sandals. David is nearly 12, dark-eyed and handsome. He has a neat woolen blazer. It is a British summer. My father, raffish and bearded but with sketchy hair, is wearing an old linen jacket pulled out of shape, probably by books. He leans back against the stone wall. He tells us how the fort was built long ago by elephants. He has described how they put the big stones, one on top of each other, climbed the round buildings so that they could sit down, and lived there very comfortably with all their belongings. Finally, he points to a large round hole, and that, he says, is the place where they kept their trunks. We all laughed. At the time, I didn't see what we were laughing at, and I still have a puzzled, surreal vision of the elephants neatly coiling their trunks rather like snakes in a basket. Many ideas had a grey hinterland of possibilities just out of sight. I usually decided to leave them, stored in a special part of my mind for later examination. But I laughed anyway. The laughter was part of the warmth that wrapped around us all, a feeling hard to describe because it was so taken for granted. Only in our worst days as a family, later and temporarily, did it disappear completely.